Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. Hi everyone, this is Klaatu, you're listening to Chronicles and Commons. This episode is going to be a continuation of the previous episode about the Kala. The Kala, in case you have forgotten since last week, are a draconic race invented by Brent Newhall for his blog geekarchaeology.com. I was drawn to the Kala because of the relative lack of neutral or good dragonborn lore in 5th edition. Now, that doesn't mean that 5th edition doesn't have that lore, it's just in my available bookshelf, I didn't have anything that said otherwise, so the only real source I have for Dragonborn on 5th edition is the Player Handbook on pages, 32, 33, and 34, I think, or 33 and 34. Not a whole lot to go on. They cite Dragonlance as kind of the origin story for Dragonborn, but if you look in Dragonlance, at least the module that I have, the draconic races are notably evil. They are servants of Takhesis, the Dark Queen, the Dragon Queen. So not much you could draw from there without a lot of alteration. So the Kala is just, for me, a drop-in replacement for the built-in lore from Wizards of the Coast, TSR. In this episode, I want to take a look at the stats that Brent provides for a typical warband of Kala. And that's not to say that Kala are always going to be encountered as a warband. They would be a playable race if you're assuming that Kala equals Dragonborn, which, again, I am. You could have these be good and not have to fight them at all, but maybe if you're teaming up with them, or maybe if you come across an evil clan that doesn't like you hanging around the area of the plains that they have decided belongs to them right now. By plains, I mean the plains, like grassy fields, not plains, like interdimensional planescape stuff. So we'll start out with a typical Kala warrior. The fearsome, combative, plains-dwelling Kala people pride themselves on their fierce warriors who wade into battle and gang up on the most powerful enemy first. Once the most powerful enemy is down, then they move on to the next most powerful enemy. So that's what the warriors' jobs are. The archers do the same thing. It's easy for melee combat in D&D and other fantasy RPGs to get predictable. Melee monsters spread out amongst the frontline PCs, while ranged monsters stick to the back and look for where they can do the most damage. Kala warriors are different. They will all coordinate to take down the biggest enemy, regardless of other powerful melee fighters in battle. While this may cost them one or two of their own warriors, their pack tactics can brutalize even a high HP barbarian or paladin that the party counts on to hold the line, quickly shifting the tide of battle. Combine this with Kala archers and warcasters for a tough battle. As such, if you're dropping the Kala warrior alone into your campaign, beware that it can do a lot of damage in groups. Use slightly fewer than you normally would until you're sure of how the PCs deal with them. That's all just Brent kind of giving us the rundown on the stats. And here are the stats. So for a Kala warrior, it's a medium humanoid, lawful creature, armor class 16, hit points 26. That's 5d8 plus 4. Speed 30 feet. Strength is 15, dex is 14, con 13, intelligence 8, wisdom 11, charisma 9. They get a proficiency bonus of plus 2. They have skills of athletics plus 3, nature plus 2, survival plus 4. Their passive perception is 10, language draconic, and their challenge rating is 1 for 200 XP. Their special abilities are pack tactics, The warrior has advantage on attack rolls against a target if at least one of the warrior's allies is within 5 feet of the target and the ally isn't incapacitated. So it's a, I guess it's a little bit like really flanking, except that it doesn't have to be flanked. Just as long as you're within 5 feet of an ally, you get the advantage. There's also the Bloodied Frenzy. The warrior deals an extra 1d8 damage on attacks when reduced to half of its hit points or fewer. Actions: longsword, melee, weapon attack, +4 to hit, reach 5 feet, 1 target. Hit is 6, that's 1d8 plus 2. Slashing damage or 10, 2d8 plus 2, if at half HP or fewer. Tactics. Warriors seek out and gang up on the most powerful enemy in the battle, taking advantage of pack tactics. So that is the Kala Warrior. So let's take a look at the Kala Archer, because these are significant in the fight as well. The fearsome combative plains-dwelling Kala people... Yeah, we've got that already. As noted for Kala Warriors, Kala prefer to find the most powerful enemy, the frontline barbarian fighter or paladin, and swarm him or her. The archers follow this strategy, even willing to fire through allies at the identified enemy. The archers also eliminate one of the big weaknesses of ranged combatants: opportunity attacks against melee enemies. The archer's rapid eye features allows it to effectively make ranged attacks as melee attacks. As such, if you're adding Kala warriors to your campaign, or rather archers to your campaign, beware that they're quite a bit more powerful than your standard ranged monster, using fewer than you would normally until you're sure of how the PCs will handle them. So the Kala archer is, I think it's a really, really nice feature. I think Brent has done a great job of designing this pack to be a real force of combat. It's really impressive. So the archer is a medium humanoid lawful, armor class 16, hit points 20, that's 5d8, speed 30, strength is 15, dex 14, con 11, intelligence 8, wisdom 14, charisma 9. So not too different from the warrior. Proficiency bonus +2, athletic +3, nature +3, survival +5, passive perception 12, language draconic, challenge 1 for 200 XP. Their special abilities are rapid eye. The archer can make one ranged attack against a target within 5 feet without provoking an opportunity attack. And then they also do the pack tactics. The archer has advantage on attack rolls against a target if at least one of the archer's allies is within 5 feet of the target and the ally is not incapacitated. Actions: short bow, ranged weapon attack, +4 to hit, range 80 or 320, one target, hit 5, that's 1d6 +2 piercing damage. Tactics: the archer focuses fire on whatever enemies the warriors are focused on, even if firing past a fellow warrior. If the archer can't get a clear shot, the archer will fire at enemy spellcasters. So now let's look at the warcasters. The Kala Warcaster is a ranged support fighter. They corral enemies within walls of force, churning up ground into difficult terrain and blasting enemies that get too near. Because Terracona, the continent upon which the Kala are designed for, is designed as a foreign, unexplored continent, the Warcaster uses unique spells outlined in the stat block. So here's their stat block. Kala Warcaster, medium humanoid lawful, armor class 11, so a little bit squishier than the warriors and archers, which is kind of to be expected. Hit points 25, that's 5d8 +3, speed of 30, strength is 10, dex is 12, con is 13, intelligence is 12, wisdom is 15, and charisma is 11. Proficiency bonus +2, skills include perception +4, nature +3, medicine +4, passive perception 14, language is draconic, challenge rating is 2, about 450 XP. Special ability, of course, is spellcasting. The Warcaster is a 4th level spellcaster. Its spellcasting ability is Wisdom, spell save DC 12 +4 to hit with spell attacks. It casts from a non-standard spell list, so its standard combat spells are listed below. Their actions, or their attacks, include Blast of Overwhelming Force. That's a melee spell attack, plus 4 to hit, reach 10 feet, one target. Hit 6, force damage, and the target must make a DC 12 con save or be pushed back 10 feet. That's a nice one. I like that. Prayer of Blessed Healing. Up to 3 creatures the warcaster can see within 50 feet gain 2d4 temporary hit points. Perimeter of Total Defense. Concentration up to 1 minute. The warcaster creates an invisible wall of force 10 feet high, 1 foot thick, and up to 30 feet long, which can turn 90 degrees every 5 feet as desired. So that's really cool. You can really, really design some interesting barriers with that mechanic. The wall can be enclosed on itself. The wall has armor class 10 and 20 hit points. Corruption of Firm Ground, an area 30 feet wide, shakes and crumbles before becoming difficult terrain. All creatures within the area are knocked prone and must make a DC 12 dexterity saving throw or take 1d8 thunder damage. Tactics. The warcaster uses Corruption of Firm Ground on enemies as they approach, then Perimeter to keep them away from allies, especially the archers, switching to Prayer if enough allies are damaged. If an enemy gets within melee range of the warcaster, it uses Blast, then moves 30 feet away. I love everything about the Kala fighting methodology. I think it's fantastically designed. I know I've already said that. And here's the Elite Warrior. So this would be the leader of the warband. A little bit more than just another warrior, though. There's some unique things here. Kala Elite Warrior. Armor class 14, hit points 50. So that's 8d10 plus 10. Speed 35 feet. Strength is 18, so that's a plus 4. Dex is 14, plus 2. Con is 13, plus 1. Int is 8. Wisdom is 11, and Charisma is 9. Proficiency bonus, plus 2. Skills, athletics, plus 4. Acrobatics, plus 2. Survival, plus 2. Stealth, plus 3. Passive perception is 10. Language is Draconic. Challenge rating is 2, 450 XP. So the special ability starts out the same as all the other Kala. They use pack tactics, so the stat blocks actually says the archer has advantage, but obviously it's intended to say the elite warrior has advantage on attacks, on attack rolls against a target if at least one of the warrior's allies is within 5 feet of the target, and the ally is not incapacitated. Next up is Bloodied Frenzy. The elite warrior deals an extra 1d6 damage on attacks when reduced to half of its hit points. So again, that's like the warrior. This interesting optional ability I like a lot. It's called the Explosive Death. That's pretty descriptive. You probably get the idea. But here's the why and the details. So the elite warrior, and only the elite warrior, has 2 bags of explosive powder. It can throw these as kind of makeshift grenades. But if it has not, then when it dies, the force of it falling to the ground causes the blast powder to explode, dealing 1d8 force damage to each creature within 5 feet per remaining blast powder bag. So if it's still got 2 powder bags on it, then it will do 1d8 force damage to 2 creatures within 5 feet. Special actions, Greatsword, melee weapon attack, plus 6 to hit. Reach of 5 feet, 1 target, hit for average of 10, or 2d6 plus 4, slashing damage, or 13, that's 3d6 plus 4, if at half HP or fewer. Blast Powder Bag, ranged weapon, that's plus 4 to hit, range is 30/120, 1 target, hit 6, 1d8 plus 2 force damage, and the target must succeed on a DC 12 con save or be knocked prone. The warrior carries only 2 of these bags. Sling, ranged weapon attack, plus 4 to hit, range 30/120, 1 target, hit 4, 1d4 plus 2 bludgeoning damage. tactics. The Elite Warrior is the most flexible, filling in wherever it can do the most damage, whether that's ranged attacks against lone spellcasters, assisting warriors in taking down a powerful melee enemy, or sneaking behind enemy lines to threaten an important non-combatant. So this is your wild card in the warband. This warrior isn't necessarily going to rush to the front to attack that primary target that the pack is attacking. It's a wild card. It'll go and do other attacks while the pack has swarmed your leading, you know, barbarian or your tank, whatever that might be. Well, I've already raved about the attack style of the Kala. I think it's really evocative, but really unique as well. It's genuinely, I think it would be a fun thing to play. And it gives a rationale for really attacking in ways that maybe wouldn't make sense otherwise. If it was just a band of whatever other monster is out there, having all of them attacking the tank, that might not always make a whole lot of sense, because there is a certain sense of self-preservation that you generally have to assume. But in this culture, that's not something that you can assume. It is something definitely different. Now, what would be also interesting, another side of this coin, would be if you were playing a Dragonborn with the Kala background, then how would that affect your style of combat as a player? I mean, you really kind of have to narrow or hone in on the strongest enemy and go attack that, I would think. I don't see how you could ignore the Kala training, unless you do, and there's some backstory excuse for that. But I think it could be interesting. It would be a really fun thing to look at of how this background would affect some of the choices the player character makes. So anyway, that's the Kala. That's everything that Brent has on them. I hope that this and the previous episode have been useful and interesting. I think it's a great addition to any fantasy world where you feel like your lizard folk are not fully developed. Use the Kala. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.